Live from Stadium Swim at Circa Las Vegas,
it's Cofield and Company, only on ESPN Las Vegas and ESPN Reno.
4 o'clock hours here, brought to you by Battleborne Injury Lawyer. 766-1400 is the number. 775 in the north, 766-1400. Willie Cofield. Willie, you know, down here at Circa Las Vegas, they've got their big betting convention. It's not theirs, but Bet Bash is being thrown. That started on Tuesday. We'll go through Saturday. Check that, I think Friday. Last night, hung out with a bunch of those folks over at Naked City Pizza. I'll give you more details on that in a little bit because I had a good meetup with someone. So, as I mentioned, right now we are in the teeth of the summer here. It doesn't bother me. I would like to jump in the pool right now. I might do it at 6:01. But I'm okay with 110, 112. At 117, it gets a little crazy here. Right now, in Cabana 24, we're at 110.4 degrees. During the day downtown on Monday, Tuesday, and Wednesday, even with the cover of the Fremont Experience, the dome that's over Fremont, it's still pretty steamy. And I don't know if you saw this one or heard it first. Arash Markazi came on yesterday and was melting down about this, quote, Vegas is dead social media thing. Because someone at Bet Bash jumped on that and took a quick video at 12:05 yesterday and said Vegas is so dead. And Arash came on. He's like, it's the middle of the day on a Wednesday. Relax. Are you getting a little tired of the Vegas bashing? Or do you understand it's a means to an end? I think a lot of people are doing it because they would like to see Vegas become a little more affordable.
I understand the bashing. I don't necessarily think Vegas is dead. So it's the type of bashing and it's the vernacular in which it's being bashed. I personally don't have a problem with dogging many corporate entities for price gouging, and because I, being an old school Las Vegan, don't appreciate the way things are right now. Obviously, you know, I go back to the 70s, 80s. Now, I get inflation and whatnot, and I get that prices are never going to be the same. But in terms of how much we've seen, the incredible markup, the extra fees, and the way that locals are treated, bash all you want.
Okay. He also brought up an example of someone coming to town, going to one of the standard bearers up on the strip, getting breakfast, and for four people it costs like $150 with a tip. When I was downtown on Monday, we did breakfast, and most of the items were between like 18 to 22. I think we got out maybe around $105 with a tip for four of us. So that, I mean, breakfast has gotten a lot higher. I understand that. But the point on the video yesterday, if you're going to take a picture of Fremont at noon on a Wednesday and say, hey, it's empty. And by the way, it's actually someone you're pretty familiar with. It was a biggin. Taylor Mathis took the picture and said Vegas is so dead. So do what you want. You know what? It got a bunch of views. It got like 200,000 views. And in the end, that's what she's doing. So I guess if she wants to batter around Vegas, then she can do so. But get her the hell out of Circa! Kick her out! I'm kidding.
That was my ear. But
sorry. I didn't back the microphone off. The audience got that yell too.
Griffin has
kick her out.
Blood trickling from his ear now.
He's fine. Unless she wants to hang out at the pool with me, then okay. Come on, bye. All right, Big Four time.
Battleborne Injury Lawyers presents the Big Four at Four. Number four.
Let me do it the right way. Is that better?
Yeah.
Okay. I lose it sometimes, man. I get emotional. What are you going to do? All right, Willie, I was just talking about the Rookie of the Year. Probably a little late to come up and win the Rookie of the Year in the second week of August in the National League. But future Rookie of the Year could be a Vegas guy. What's going on with a former Gorman product who's in the Las Vegas Phillies system.
Yeah, wild, right? I mean, we've already got Bryce Harper there. Comes over from the Nationals, of course. Bryson Stott is a part of that program. And now, former Gorman star Justin Crawford, 21-year-old, is absolutely tearing it up in the AAA. And his coaches down there believe that he's ready. He's ready to come to the majors. The problem is, with incredible bat and incredible defensive skills, the problem is when you look at the Phillies and what they have in guys like Kepler, Max Kepler, Brandon Marsh, Castellanos, Harrison Bader, they're stacked in the outfield. So what I'm wondering is when playoff rosters are submitted and they expand and they can bring up whomever, is if this kid makes an appearance. I got news for you. If he has a shot, he gets a chance, he has an opportunity, he's not one that's going to, he's not going to blow this opportunity. He's ready to go now. And I think in having, even though they're from three different eras, in having guys like Bryce Harper, Bryson Stott, there's that familiarity. They're going to welcome him with open arms. I'm we're just sitting here pins and needles just waiting to hear his name called up. It'll be good to see.
Well, he's definitely projectable at 6'3 and 175. And good for the Phillies because the top of the draft included guys like Jackson Holliday and then other dudes like Kumar Rocker, who hasn't really worked out to this point. I mean, this is still a pretty young class, the 2021 class, but he went with the 17th pick. So he might have gotten some really good value there at number 17. And you mentioned one of the guys who could go bye-bye after the year in Nick Castellanos, who's somewhat productive. He's not super overpaid, but I'm sure they could clear out some space and get Crawford onto the big league squad. Or hey, maybe Castellanos stays around and Crawford is a backup and he gets blended in next year as he'll be just 22 years old. Number three. Willie, so I saw Mark McMillan, who is an Arizona regular. He's got a residence down there, does a lot of teaching and clinics, coaching down in Arizona. And I saw him flash some pictures today post some pictures today with Ricky Pearsall and one Brock Purdy. And if folks don't know, the Purdy's Brock and Chuba, that family is down in Arizona. Do you have a chance to catch up to Brock Purdy?
I did. It was kind of cool because what a lot of people don't realize, this, he brings this underdog story. He wears that label well in terms of the underdog role. There was actually a story. I can't remember the site. Pro Football Network, maybe? Anyway, that, how he's relishing in that underdog role his entire life. And I brought up a situation, which I brought up before on this show and other times, of when I covered him for a weekend in 2017 out in Henderson in the Pylon Nationals. Here's what he said.
Brock, several years back, I'm not sure if it was your first time to Vegas, but 7-on-7 tournament, Pylon. A lot of people that tournament were talking about Amon-Ra, DTR, Brevin, the undefeated Gorman team, and you led Tucson Turf to the title. And I've often wondered, if you've ever thought back to those times when everyone else's name was getting thrown out there, but you overcame adversity?
Yeah, there's stories and stuff. We'll laugh, and whenever the guys are together and we get bragging about high school days or whatever, we're like, oh yeah, dude, well, there was this one time in 7-on-7, I had my high school team, and we had no one really big.
Yep.
And then we went up against the Bishop Gorman guys, so they had, DTR and Brevin Jordan and a bunch of other guys going D1, and this little Perry high school team came in, and then we upset them and stuff. So yeah, I mean, it's all part of the story and stuff, and it's fun, but I feel like that's sort of just been the story of my life and sort of where I've come from, of being the underdog, and then you look back on those moments, and when no one believed in you, you believed in yourself and you go get it done. So but yeah, that was out here in Henderson.
I covered it for USA Today.
Let's go. You're a real one. Appreciate you.
There he is, Brock Purdy, quarterback of the Niners.
It's kind of a nice way to tie Southern Nevada in with this kid, right, in terms of everything that he's done. Three-star recruit out of Perry High School in Gilbert, Arizona, goes to Iowa State, breaks just about every passing record up there. He's labeled Mr. Irrelevant as the last pick in the draft, 2022. And in his second season, where does he play the Super Bowl? Right back here in Las Vegas. Yes, they lost, but in overtime in an epic Super Bowl against the Kansas City Chiefs. And then he's out there today you know, back in Vegas. And he did play. He's played against the Raiders here in Allegiant. So I'll have something up, based around that quote that you just heard and just sort of tying it together that in some way, shape, or form, Southern Nevada will always hold a special place in his heart. Why? Because that might have been the sort of the tipping off point of him overcoming adversity and proving the doubters wrong in that underdog role when nobody knew who he was or cared who he was. They all had their eyes on somebody else, and he overcame that and led the Tucson Turf to the 7-on-7 championship, and then the rest is sort of history as he's grown his career from there.
Number two.
Willie Cofield. Big 4-4 live here at Circle Las Vegas at Stadium Swim. George Kittle, of course, on hand as well with the Niners and the Raiders in a joint practice. Listen to Kittle here talk about the Vegas defense, which he said was very familiar to some tape that he watched back from 2015.
The Broncos had an incredible defensive line. From their edges, how fast they flew up the field, their deep tackles were so good. And then just to go into this, you're going to go against Max Crosby. Like, you got to take advantage of those reps because you're going against guys who are, you know, premier what they do. And that will just make the rest of the season a lot easier when you're going against guys that might not be as good as them. And it just makes sure, because today, like with Max, your technique has to be so perfect on every snap because he's fast enough to make you miss. He jukes people out and he's physical enough to go through your face. So you really have to be under control and really dialed in with your technique. Otherwise, he's going to make your life not very fun.
Yeah, Max was a giant pain in the ass for the opposition in these joint practices.
He is, and while I'll be doing my little piece on Brock, our good buddy and member of the show company, Adam Hill, is doing a little takeout on Kittle's comments because he also points out where, hey, defensive coordinator, defensive coaches do not do this specific thing, and I'm going to leave it out there so you can go click the story that Adam wrote. Because he also beat Max Crosby. There's a scheme in which he is able to get around and beat the All-Pro edge rusher. So Adam's doing a story for the Review Journal on that. But Kittle was very complimentary, and he actually had fun with the media today and all of us, and had some pretty good one-liners here and there. But he really talked up the atmosphere. Loved the vibe, you know, the Pete Carroll vibe, and coming in here and actually everybody that we had today, we sort of asked about the energy, and when you come in as the opponent as part of a joint practice, if you can feed off of that, even though you're, you know, the outside team, and they all, you know, loved what they saw out there at Raiders facility with a big, very big crowd and the music and the hype and sort of that Bay Area rivalry that may still be in play. So it was a good time. Kittle had a lot of complimentary things, like I said, to say about Max Crosby. Adam Hill with that story at LVRJ.com.
Number one.
Well, I got to say, I'm legitimately disappointed. I said it yesterday. I'll repeat it again. It does look like Shedeur Sanders is 100% for sure out of the Browns preseason game on Saturday. Oblique injury, which is always very scary. But here's the thing. For the NFL, it's actually as much of a juggernaut the league is for TV in the preseason, and I'm sure they want ratings in the preseason, right? Future sales based on numbers. His first game drew 2.2 million on NFL Network. It was the most viewed game on NFL Network, preseason game on NFL Network in 10 freaking years. This guy is the Caitlin Clark of the NFL. More on Shedeur and the injury on the way.
Only on ESPN Las Vegas and ESPN Reno. It's Cofield and Company.
Live from Stadium Swim at Circa Las Vegas.
All right, Willie, give me your reaction to Shedeur Sanders 1 drawing 2.2 million viewers for his debut game preseason. That was the highest number for a preseason game on NFL Network in 10 years. And now the bummer, he's going to be down for a while. He's not going to play this weekend. He didn't practice today. He came out, a lot of fan adulation, but with the oblique, he is unavailable.
First of all, as far as the 2.2, it's very telling as far as the viewership. The comparison to Caitlin Clark is an interesting one. When I saw that, I get where you're going, but I would venture to say that Caitlin Clark is a bigger and more polarizing because she brought new eyes and new viewership and brand new fans to people who legitimately, when they say, I never heard of it, I know there are snarky people with when it comes to Asia or Brianna Stewart, you know, the faces before Caitlin got there, and they say, who? Never heard of her. They've heard of her. But Caitlin brought new eyes. I don't know if Shador, but he's definitely has NFL fans enthused that want to see what he's going to do. And those numbers are popping in the league and the Browns, and they should all be appreciative of, you know, his, I guess, his persona, his presence, and people interested in seeing what he will do or won't do, whatever their expectations were for him. But it is sad to see that, you know, he's injured. As you mentioned before, an oblique can be tricky, and you want to nurse that. It's all, you know, it's weird. It's almost as sort of tricky as what Caitlin's going through with the groin injury. You do not want to rush something like that back, because if you tear it too much, you know, you tear into it, if it's just a strain, it's one thing. You tear that, you're gone for a long time. I mean, anything in that midsection, a cracked rib, a strained or torn oblique. So they want to be careful in bringing him back the right way.
So right now, I'm looking for an update here. I don't see an update. And we may not know until Saturday, but Kevin Stefanski said the plan is, and you know, you want to talk about writing the script perfectly, the plan is Dylan Gabriel gets the start on Saturday if his hamstring responds well. On the oblique with Shador, Stefanski said, yeah, he felt it early in practice, I think warming up, then felt it throughout individual drills. He said if it's a right guard, you can play through that. When it's a quarterback, you kind of need that muscle to throw. He said, I think it's just with throwers, pitchers, guys that torque, twist their body, you got to be really careful. So to Willie's point, you know, groin, oblique. And we see in baseball, obliques can take, sometimes it's 5 weeks. I've seen guys been down for
2 months.
Freaking 3 months.
Yeah.
Now, good news for the Browns is that as of now, prosecutors, I think this was in Florida, are not going to move forward with the case with rookie running back Quinshon Judkins, a second-round pick. So that should clear the way for him to return to the team. Now, it's pretty late in the process. So I don't know if he'll be ready for the regular season, but that's good for the Browns because they haven't got much good news to this point. Did you get a chance, speaking of the NFL, did you get a chance to see any of the highlights from the Kelce brothers pod with Taylor Swift?
Nope. Did not. We've discussed this. Is when I'm very, very. I get a very low grade. I am a grade. I am a D student when it comes to podcasts and listening. I've asked you time and time again. Hey, and you were like, Willie, I really don't listen to anything specific. It's something that catches my eye or ear, if you will. And I've been so busy the last few days with Aces stuff and being out at the Raiders facility that I've really missed out on a lot of things that have been taking place on the timelines.
I wasn't getting on you. I didn't see any of it at all, and I probably won't watch any of it unless it's consumable in small pieces. The story that came out of this, though, Griffin sent this over, that it hit a peak, the Kelce Bros podcast, a live peak of 1.3 million viewers.
Wow.
On YouTube, but then about an hour and 45 minutes into the episode, the stream ended. You had all these fans all frustrated, and I saw someone bring up the point that, hey, YouTube actually has NFL games now, you know, of their own, YouTube TV. So this is another one of those platforms, like, better get it together. If you can't handle the Kelce Bros podcast with Taylor Swift, you have an NFL game, that's going to be a much bigger audience. So good test run here, but get it right.
Yeah, I think you're talking about two different things. You're talking about a stream, I think when you prepare for a production, they have all hands on deck, and I'm guessing it's a completely different platform. I could be wrong. I don't know about that concept. Griff, you sent this over. You might know a little bit more as far as, you know, the technical stuff, especially being, you know, running the board and whatnot. As far as two different kinds of platforms, no, or is it, would it be the same?
I don't believe it would be the same. I have to imagine, you know, you look at Netflix when they had Jake Paul versus Mike Tyson. You know, I believe a lot of people kind of use that as a way to gauge, you know, to critique these platforms, these streaming platforms, especially when they come with live sporting events. So I think when it came to when it comes to YouTube, you know, the Kelce brothers putting on their episode of New Heights, I think the system in which they did so, that's not going to be the same system YouTube will be using when they air that NFL game. So I think, you know, it's a bit of a stretch to try to connect those two. I think, you know, let's wait and see what happens.
Ace is closer to home. Getting back on the winning track. Now 5 in a row, beat the Liberty. Hadn't beaten the Liberty since 2023. Liberty, in the meantime, won a championship. Okay, so what's changed here? Because they're looking pretty good at 19-14.
Well, I think they obviously got tired of losing the way that they were losing. But two things for me stand out. One is Jewel Lloyd going to Becky Hammon saying, hey, let's bring me off the bench. And Becky waited until she felt it was the right time, and she did so. And since Jewel Lloyd has been moved to the bench, the Aces are 7-1. The other thing is the arrival of Nalissa Smith. Eddie, you know, you just can't deny it. And you can ignore the stat sheet, even though that she's got decent numbers. The fact of the matter is you bring someone like that who has been, you know, in truculent situations, you know, whether it was at Indiana while Dejanay was in Connecticut, when they were both in Dallas. It's that culture of the locker room. I think we see it across the board. You know, we heard the same thing about Jack Eichel. Everyone beware when he gets here for what he could be in the locker room, and he's been great. They won a Stanley Cup. Nalissa Smith, you know, I was like, oh, this isn't going to work. She's embraced the locker room. The locker room's embraced her. She says it's the greatest thing that's happened to her in her career. And it's providing things on the court, whether it shows up on the stat sheet or not. The other thing is they're getting decent play off the bench. For a while, it was Aaliyah Nye. She's a little bit of a slump right now, but Dana Evans has come off the bench. I watched that Connecticut game where Connecticut was up by double digits. The Aces come back. The Connecticut Sun are hanging around. That was the game in which Asia Wilson becomes the first WNBA player to do 30-20 double-double. Jackie has a big game, but it wasn't until Dana Evans crosses up Marina Mabry, arguably the Sun's best defender, and pulls up for a wide-open mid-range jumper to push the lead back to 10, and it was somewhat of the dagger. So, I mean, collectively, and then overall, when you put all those things together, what they have, Steve, that they didn't have at the beginning of the season, was a team in the fourth quarter when that opposition is going to make a run, that the Aces put together one of those jugular stomping runs that they've done during the championship years and played with purpose to pull away for the win. And that's what we saw last night against the Liberty.
And now the setup in the league with about 11 or 12 games left in the regular season, from the 4 seed down to the 10 seed, it's separated by 5.5 games.
Yeah.
So the Mystics have played some pretty good basketball this year. We know that GSV has been a big surprise as an expansion franchise, but the Aces are holding off now the Fever, the Valkyries, the Storm, the Sparks, the Mystics, but they also, in front of them, have the Mercury within hailing distance, just one game back. Two in the loss column of getting the 4 seed.
And guess where they play tomorrow night? They will be in Phoenix to play MVP candidate Alyssa Thomas and one of the best defensive teams in the league. Phoenix now has Dawana Bonner, and not to mention a former WNBA Finals MVP and champion in Kalia Copper. So Phoenix is a very good basketball team, but unfortunately for them, the Mercury are playing arguably the hottest team in the WNBA. And when I use that, you know, I mean, Minnesota has been playing well. Obviously, they're 27-5, but they've been playing well. So you got to look at the team that's playing with a lot of steam, a lot of momentum, and playing well and playing cohesive. 5-game win streak. The Aces, you know, when you talk about a team coming from behind, and I mean behind in the standings, that was not too long ago just in 10th place by fractions of a decimal point, half game here or there. Now in 5th, looking to get that top 4 seed and home court advantage, the Aces are dangerous.
Yeah, looking at the schedule the rest of the way for the Mercury, a pretty tough schedule. They've got 3 scrubs in the Wings, the Sun, and the Sky. But the rest of the games are all against those playoff teams or teams in front of them.
Yeah, big game coming up at T-Mobile toward the end. They got three home games in a row at T-Mobile, one against the Lynx, two against the Sky. That game against the Lynx is going to be a game to be at, a game to watch, a game to be a part of, a game to cover. I don't care who you are, because let's not forget what the Lynx did, scoring the biggest road victory. And if people phrase it that way, the Minnesota Lynx scored the biggest, the largest road victory in WNBA history when they beat the Aces by 53. Well, if that's true, guess what? On the other end, that means that the Aces suffered home loss in WNBA history. So if you don't think that Asia Wilson and company are going to, and don't forget, that's the game afterwards. They played second of back-to-back nights, and Asia sent a group message and said, if you're not a part of what, if you're not embarrassed from last night, you don't want to be a part of what we're doing here, don't bother showing up.
The time is now to sign up for the biggest contest in the state of Nevada for the football season, Circa Million, Circa Survivor. There is no rake. All the extra money will go into the prize pool. Guaranteed $6 million prize pool for Circa Million. That's a $1,000 entry. Pick five teams each week against the spread. Circa Survivor, $15 million guaranteed to the winner. $1,000 to get into it. You go 20-0 or be the last person standing to win. All you got to do is pick up straight-up winner every week. Not that easy, though. You got to register in person at a Circa Sportsbook in the state of Nevada. Get in there now. Sign up for $21 million in guaranteed prizes. Circa Million.
Now back to Cofield and Company, live from Stadium Swim at Circa Las Vegas.
You know, Cofield and Company has a unique blend of curmudgeons and then joyous, glass overflowing folks like myself. And I bring up that example because we definitely have a split on the show, Willie, with halftime entertainment and bands at football games. I love them. I think it's awesome. I will tell you, one of the best halftime entertainment I've ever seen was actually at a UNLV football game on the road,
yep,
in San Antonio, UTSA,
yep,
at the Alamo Dome, and there was a mariachi band. I think, God, it was one of the schools. I don't know if it was UTSA itself, but anyway, it might have been a high school band. They were unbelievable. I love mariachi. And the other day, the Texas Rangers brought in a mariachi band. They're actually called Metalachi. How about this blend of mariachi, metal, and a tribute to Ozzy? All right, you get the feeling. That was good stuff. Now, we know the Raiders did a really good job with the halftime entertainment. I think the Axley Booker, tremendous. UNLV is trying to beef up what they do outside in the tailgate before the game. Did you see this list of variety they're going to have during their Rebel Village tailgates?
I did not.
Well, it's right in front of you. Opening game,
just letting you know,
is Idaho State. It's not always literal when I ask, have you seen it?
I know. You know what's funny? I'm going to interrupt you. I'm not even asked, can I interrupt you? You know what's funny is you present this stuff. You know, Willie, we're talking about the bands versus the this. You introduce the whole thing. Then you give us the sample. You never even ask my opinion. You never even ask, do I like the band? Do I like halftime entertainment? You just take over the segment. I'll just hear and listen to you. That wasn't, by the way, that was halftime entertainment, what we just listened to. That wasn't a band. In my opinion, that was entertainment. That wasn't banned. If you're going to give me halftime, a college halftime entertainment, I will take a band every single day, twice on Sunday, and I'll double down if it's a band from HBCU school. 100%. I can't wait till that Vegas Classic comes. You got those historic black college marching bands. Unbelievable. I'll take that 100%.
That is next level stuff.
Yes.
So I want to see that too. I was just looking at the mix. Mm-hmm. I don't know all these groups. And I don't know if they have a Mexican theme with any of them. I'll have to look up specifics. But Idaho State, they're going to have Mark McKay, who's a country artist. UCLA game, it's going to be the Spasmatics. Air Force on the 11th of October, Velvet, Elvis, and these all go down again at Rebel Village Fan Zone. No charge to get in. Mm-hmm. There are exclusive VIP areas. Mm-hmm. If you want to get into the UNLV alum and friends pregame tailgate, you can get tickets for that. So I would buy those relatively soon. But, yeah, all six games are going to have pregame out front. New Mexico will be Empire Records, and then Des Houston will be playing at Utah State. So another cool deal. And from what I hear, another cool deal added to the UNLV game experience. From what I hear, Dan Mullen really cares about the in-game experience inside Allegiant.
Yeah.
Like, he's one of the guys who is spearheading it. Like, he wants to be involved in every nook and cranny of this, which I think is really important. You know, if you're the head coach, if you have the time and you get involved and you want to make the game day experience better, go ahead and do it. So I can't wait to see what Dan Mullen's bringing over from all his years and in college football, you know, as a head coach at Florida and Mississippi State and going back to his days as an assistant coach with Urban Meyer.
Live from Stadium Swim at Circa, it's Cofield and Company on ESPN Las Vegas and ESPN Sports Reno.
It is Cofield and Company. Steve Cofield, Willie Ramirez, Griffin running the show. It is the Battleborn Hour. We've got our brethren up in Reno and joining us right now from that sort of northern area. They're all familia, if you will, up there. San Fran, the Bay Area, Reno. And we have familia down here in the media room. The return of Vic Tafer to the media center out at the Raiders headquarters. Vic Tafer joining us now, the beat writer with the San Francisco 49ers. What's up, Vic?
What's up, baby? How you doing?
Well, I'm a little disappointed in the media from Las Vegas. You were booed upon arrival today. Did you take that as a sort of a badge of honor as you walked into the room? I mean, they're sort of treating you like our guy Levi Edwards when he walks in.
No, it was all respect. There was a smattering of applause and some people were, I think it was all good fun. But I had a good time. It was nice to be back there. I enjoyed seeing everybody and a lot of fans today. The bigger fan turnout than I remember back in my day, but it was a good atmosphere.
It was a lot of fans. We're unsure how many of them were here because they heard you were going to be out there. We do know that there were a lot of former 49ers, a lot of former Raiders. We saw freshly gold-jacketed Eric Allen was out there. Saw four-time champion, Super Bowl champ Jesse Sapolo. So, exciting crowd. What did you take from it on the whole? First of all, from the 49ers, since that's your beat, what did you take from today?
I thought it was a good day. They couldn't do as much as they probably wanted to because they have a lot of injuries. I think Kyle Shanahan mentioned they're down 20 guys today. Only three defensive starters were able to practice. But I thought they got some work done. They kind of kept their cool. I think they were worried about getting a fight. I know Max Crosby said he wanted to throw some blows in his podcast, but I think they did a good job of keeping their cool and getting some work done and just kind of moving forward.
Yeah, you know, I mean, Max says what he says on the podcast, and I think he's always going to be chirping when he's out there. But I saw a lot of the Raiders, you know, antagonizing, standing over guys, and I really thought they were trying to get under their skin. And, you know, I asked Kyle Shanahan, you know, what it seemed as if they did a really good job of controlling themselves. We're in a normal situation for the amount of chirping. Was there a message sent? And apparently the message was sent before the Denver game. I don't want to see any of that. And it was, he even went as far as telling some of the guys, hey, you marginal guys out there, it could mean the end of your time here. So I don't even want to see it.
Yeah, and for sure, I think a big part of it, people always ask me the biggest difference between the Niners and the Raiders in terms of my short time here. I say the Niners have a great leadership core. There's like 7-8 players who are like not only great players, they lead guys, but also really good leaders by example, by message. They take young guys under their wings. Almost one per position room. I think those guys got the message out as well as Kyle did as far as, hey, we're here to get some work done. It's okay to like, you know, have a little, like, there's like one play too, Fred Warner kind of gave Dante Thornton a good lick. Definitely caught Dante off guard. And I think that you can have your moments, pick your spots, but we're not here to get in any fights. We're not here to get in any big tussles. Just get your work done and move on.
Vic Tafer joining us from The Athletic, formerly on the Raiders beat, now on the San Francisco 49ers beat. You heard me ask Brock Purdy about his time as a junior in high school. He comes out here unheralded. Nobody really gave a crap about him or the Tucson turf, and he leads him past his big win that he brought. I didn't even know he was going to bring that game up, and he brings up the win over the undefeated Gorman team in the 7-on-7. They go on to win the championship, and it was sort of that first tipping point of the underdog role that he's embraced. Then from high school, his senior year, comes out a three-star recruit, goes to Iowa State, shatters those records, second year with the Niners, goes to the Super Bowl. How have you seen, you know, just in your time, short time there, just sort of him relishing that, but also be a leader on that team?
Yeah, I mean, he got this huge contract this offseason, so everyone's trying to rank him where he falls. He's top 10, he's top 15. And to me, the main thing with Brock is, like, it came out of nowhere. He's definitely improved every year he's been in the league, and so I think just keep making those strides, and he'll be fine. The players all believe in him. The coaches believe in him, obviously, so I think he's in a really good spot where he's shown he can, you know, work this offense that Kyle wants him to run as far as timing and getting the ball out when it has to and in the right spot. And I think they're in good shape. I think he's had a good offseason. Well, today was better than last week as far as the joint practices go. But I think he's been good, and I think the teammates think he's ready to go to the next level.
Vic Tafer up on Cofield & Company. As Willie mentioned, former Raiders beat writer, now covering the Niners. Well, you know, some of your notes today were pretty encouraging, I would assume, for Niners fans. First of all, I saw you tweet out Niners defense knocking a lot of balls loose and letting the Raiders know about it. I mean, it is one of the questions going in, this kind of retooled Niners defense.
Yeah, I think, again, Warner was a big part of that. Warner had a guys play against Brock Bowers where he booked the play up, and I think it's a chippy unit. I think they got Robert Sala back. They're definitely excited about that. He's kind of bringing a lot more blitzes than he's probably shown in the past, a lot more attack mode. I think the players are buying in, and today it was a good session against the Raiders.
No Nick Bosa, though, right? He is dinged up right now?
Yeah, he's got a sore neck. They've done all throughout camp, they're kind of giving him a couple days off here and there, and he played last week. So I think he's fine. It's just a matter of, like, let's see with Trent Williams. Trent Williams is in great shape, but he didn't go to either because you guys are getting older. You got to pick your spots. The main thing is get them healthy and get them ready for the week one game.
One of the areas they are retooling in the Niners is on the defensive line at defensive tackle. So C.J. West has to leave practice. What's the determination on him, and how has he looked so far?
Yeah, it was a kind of scary moment. He's got a knee kind of buckled, but I think they say he should be fine. It's like a hyperextended knee, so I'm hoping just a week or so. The same injury that Mychal Williams has, a first-round pick. I think two guys are definitely counting on it. In the first five picks in the draft for defensive players, I need those guys to at least contribute. C.J. West has been one of the better rookies out there. He's definitely got great hands and a good push, kind of like a little fire hydrant with who can move people. So I think they're happy with that pick right now.
I know SiriusXM NFL was at Niners camp the other day, and I think it was Amber Thea Harris, who does stuff with the Raiders, was anchoring that deal. And I heard her talking to John Lynch, and I tell you, John Lynch had a lot of good things to say about Andre Dillard and was kind of hoping, hey, you know what, on the bounce back here, the guy's finally going to get it, and now the Niners get bad news on an offensive line import, huh?
Yeah, that's kind of a quick turnaround because he just came back last week. Yeah, I think he had ankle surgery, and they're waiting for him. Finally, last week he was back, and they're excited about it, and all of a sudden today he's gone. So I don't know if he had a setback in practice. I'm not sure what the details were, but clearly a guy they were kind of counting on because they don't have much of a lot of depth in the O-line, so I think he's out. And it looks like right now Spencer Burford and Austin Pleasants will be the backup tackles.
Raiders O-line, what did you see today?
I was impressed. I mean, I came in, the bar was low, I'll be honest. I was like, you know, my big question coming into here was like, how do you get Ashton Jeanty and not address the O-line? And I wasn't super high on the Colton Miller exchange. I think Colton's a good player, but I don't know if at this point he's worth all that money that's around him. But I was impressed today. I thought they all look good. I like what they're doing as far as the whole Jordan Meredith at center thing. I think to me that makes sense. He's probably better at center than he is at guard. And I think JPJ is fine probably wherever you put him. So I think that, to me, I thought they looked good today. Nice, they gave Gino a lot of time in the pocket, and then I think that I was impressed.
Vic, you covered the Raiders for a long time, and, you know, if you go back, say, 5-6 years, they had one of the most expensive offensive lines in the league. Since then, they've had three regimes. I mean, we don't have a complete story on what spy tech's going to be like, but outside of Colton Miller, they really haven't spent a lot of high draft picks on offensive linemen. Do they need to change their philosophy? Do they need to invest more in the young guys or actually go via free agency? They also don't do that. They really don't give out gigantic deals for outsiders.
Yeah, it's interesting. I think talking to Spytek back at the owners' meetings, I know he prides himself on getting O-linemen late in the draft. I got a couple guys this year, I think, around almost like three or four, who they're kind of maybe looking at long-term projects. So I think that's his plan, is kind of good guys, third, fourth round of drafts. Hopefully he strike gold and he can save some money. But I think that's – I don't think it's a win-now approach this year as far as the O-line. They're more like looking ahead and trying to build a plan out for, I think, two or three years down the road.
Vic Tafer's with us. I want to get into the Niners' offense a little bit, especially with some of the injuries in a second. I got to see you last night. We had a meetup outside. I didn't know if you missed this, Willie. I didn't know if Vic was going to throw down on the much younger Griffin, but it was like Big John Studd meeting up with Andre the Giant, kind of sizing each other up. What the hell was going on outside, Vic?
Wow.
He's talking about your height. And,
Wait a minute.
It was,
hey man, if you're in the parking lot and a guy approaches you, you don't know what's up. You got to find out what time it is. But he was a nice young man. We hit it off fine. We played some ball on his day, as did I. So it was good. But yeah, it was all just meet and greet in the parking lot. That's what it was.
Wait a minute. We're standing at the facility in the weight room at the Raiders. You bring up last night. You tell me where you're at with Cofield. You tell me the event. And you don't tell me about a parking lot incident?
We're joking.
I'm out of this conversation.
We're just having fun, Willie. We're not being serious. It's a levity. It's a joke. We're like having fun.
I understand. I know. Just roll with it here. Griffin's sitting to the right of me, Vic. Roll with it, buddy. Come on, roll
Griffin.
With
it. Griffin was
go. Oh, God, Vic. Griffin was funny because Griffin walks up and Griffin's like, what are you, 6'7"? He's like, I'm looking up here. What's going on? And Vic made a joke. He's like, I think I shrunk a little bit. By the way, Vic, did you have any wings, or did you just grab the one slice of pizza?
Yeah, I had happy hour before I got there. It was kind of a bad call, so I wasn't that. But I had a slice of pizza. It was good. I've eaten every many times. I'm a big fan of the naked pizza. But yeah, I was a little not really totally hungry last night. So bad on my part.
Okay, you got to tell me what's going on with Purdy in terms of the weapons. So what's the latest with Juwan Jennings and the Ayuk news? That sounds like it's going to be a while.
Yeah, I think Ayuk's probably week six, but I think he's been at practice. He looks like he's doing a little bit of things. So I don't think it's an unrealistic timeline. I think week six probably sounds like it's probably true. Jennings was in town today. He's getting treatment. That's a good sign. I think for him, he has a calf injury, but he also wants a new contract. And he's in a great spot where he has some real leverage because they obviously don't have Ayuk. And they have some other injuries up front. So right now, there's kind of thin at receiver. So, and they need him. They know that. So they don't really want to pay him a new contract, but they may have to. So I think we'll see if there's any progress there. But I like the spot he's in as far as leverage right now.
Starting the season, could Ricky Pearsall fill in and be like a 5-6 target per game guy early in the year? Is he that good yet?
Yeah, that's the plan. I think he's had some good practices. I think to be much more comfortable if it was like Jennings and Pearsall rather than like, say, Pearsall and like Jacob Cowling or I don't know who else would be. Like, I think they want Pearsall to be number two at first, but he's had a good camp. He gets open. He's definitely he worked with Brock Purdy in the offseason as far as timing and knowing where he wants the ball and stuff, which is a good thing. So they like his progress. I think obviously had a rough year last year getting shot and all that. But, yeah, I think he's making progress. They're happy with where he's headed.
Vic Tafer from The Athletic, Niners beat writer now. Are you planning on doing your week-by-week picks against the spread again?
Well, it was so good last year, man. I made people so much money for going against me. Like, I can't stop now. So.
Vic's picks. Will you do something in the preseason on futures? Will you do some win totals? And I'm curious where you stand on 10.5 over-under wins for the Niners.
I did actually do a wins total column, I think, last month. And I believe back then I had the Niners going over. I think like I said, they're in a good shape as far as, you know, McCaffrey's healthy, Kittle's back, Fred Warner's still a stud, Bosa looks like he's motivated. So I like their star players are definitely good enough to get him to that number. I think the schedule is very favorable. The question mark now a month in is their depth. They don't have much. So any kind of injuries, and they're really going to be screwed. So I'm as high on over 10.5 as I was a month ago.
Vic, good spot. Good to see you, buddy. I hope you're doing well. I hope you enjoy the new gig.
All right, boys. Appreciate you.
There he is, Vic Tafer, who I know at the start of the interview you were discussing it, but was quick to mention sort of the difference in feel between the way the Niners run the organization and the way the Raiders did when he was around.
Yeah, I mean, just – it's. I think he has seen – the Raiders
yes.
organization at so many different levels for over you know, decades. I mean, he could talk about, you know, 5, 6, 7 coaches, general manager. So definitely different environments that he's expertise on.